This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Recreational marijuana has been legal for less than a month in Massachusetts, but groups are already making plans to ensure minority entrepreneurs are included in the state's newly legalized business. Last month, Boston City Councilor Ayanna Pressley held a hearing on the subject, and tonight, the National Cannabis Industry Association is meeting in Cambridge where they'll discuss ideas. So what can Boston learn from other cities that have already legalized marijuana? How have or have not minorities been included in legalized pot businesses elsewhere? Joining us with more is Shalene Title. She's a founding board member of the Minority Cannabis Business Association and a partner at THC Staffing, a recruiting firm for the legal marijuana industry. She'll also be speaking tonight at the Northeast Cannabis Caucus. Shalene Title, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me on.
So first of all, give us a sense as to what the numbers are regarding minority-owned businesses in states where marijuana has been legalized. You know, what percentage of businesses are owned by minorities?
Well, incredibly, we don't have official statistics on that, which is something that needs to change, first of all. But based on the data that we do have, it's a pretty dismal picture. The estimate is that 1% of retail marijuana dispensaries are owned by people of color across the country.
1%?
That's right.
Just 1%. Okay, so I see there was a March 2016 investigation by BuzzFeed that also found that number. And we were also looking at some numbers specifically, for example, in Colorado, right, where they say they have, 400 or so businesses, and just three of them are owned by minorities?
That's right. So Wanda James, who is the only black female owner of a dispensary in Colorado, had actually come to Boston for the hearing that Councillor Pressley held on this subject. And she testified that, yes, out of 400 dispensaries in Colorado, only three have black owners.
So what are we seeing as the major obstacles for getting more minority-owned businesses in the cannabis industry?
Well, there's a couple of things. And the good news is that we were able to learn from these past mistakes when it comes to Massachusetts law. So I think a primary issue is that earlier states actually prevented people with past marijuana convictions from getting a job in or starting a marijuana business, which is obviously a problem because we're trying to address the racial disparities in the war on marijuana, not perpetuate them. And so in Massachusetts, there is no such exclusion for people that have marijuana convictions. The other thing is barriers to entry in terms of sky-high application fees, really complex application processes, and a lack of capital. Mm-hmm. When you can't have traditional banking loans, then you have to have family or friends who are willing to lend you capital.
Right. And minority entrepreneurs have historically had a tougher time getting access to capital as it was, regardless of what the business is. And here in Massachusetts, as the law is currently written, the initial application for a license will cost $3,000, which is non-refundable, right?
That's right.
And the license and a full license for retail marijuana sales will cost some $15,000.
That's right. And compare that to our medical program where there's a $30,000 non-refundable application fee. So it's been reduced to 10%.
Okay, so then if we have these problems of already more difficult or a greater challenge in accessing capital, and then on top of that we have sort of uncertainties around which banks will or won't be willing to be involved in the nascent cannabis industry in Massachusetts, what can we do to tackle that problem for minority entrepreneurs?
Well, there was a lot brought up at this hearing that Councillor Pressley held, and I think a big part of it is just acknowledging that there's a problem to begin with and being proactive and intentional. So one thing that we're lucky to have in Massachusetts is a provision in our law that requires the regulating agency, the Cannabis Control Commission, to enact some type of procedures and policies that address this problem by addressing participation in the industry for people who are from these communities that have been historically targeted by the drug war.
Hmm. Well, in Oakland, California, for example, they've proposed reserving half of all new permits to sell medical marijuana for either those who were arrested for cannabis-related crimes or those who have lived for 2 years or longer in certain Oakland communities that have had a high number of cannabis-related arrests. Now, as you pointed out earlier, in Massachusetts, we don't have the sort of we're not penalizing people who have had cannabis-related convictions if they want to enter the marijuana business, right?
Right.
But what about the second half of that idea about reserving some licenses for communities that have had a disproportionate number of arrests?
I think the intent there is so important and definitely something to learn from. What we've seen in Oakland is that perhaps those particular parameters might be too restrictive because they're having trouble finding applicants who meet exactly those requirements. So what I might recommend for jurisdictions here is that they first do some research to see what kind of applicants are out there, what their backgrounds are before they decide on the actual parameters. But yes, in general, I think that we need to be using this new industry to address the harms that have been done by the war on drugs for the past 40 years and have some kind of restorative impact.
Well, I'm just we're seeing some other examples of states that are trying different things, because of course this is, you know, this is an issue that many states that have legalized marijuana are facing in terms of minority entrepreneurs being boxed out of the new market. In Oregon, I believe some cities there passed an additional 3% tax to assist neighborhood minority-owned businesses in an incubator program. Is there any interest in doing something like that here?
Yeah, that was brought up a lot at the hearing. My colleague, Jesse Horton, who's the chairman of the Minority Cannabis Business Association, was the person who worked on that in Portland. And it's the first time, actually, that a specific amount of tax revenue has been set aside to support the communities that have been targeted by cannabis prohibition. There's an interesting thing here where we weren't able to do that in the ballot initiative process. But now that legislators are talking about possibly changing the cannabis law, I think that's one improvement that could be made. We could look at how the tax revenue or the law enforcement cost savings could be used for those kinds of programs.
Right. You know, I think there's a lot of popular sentiment that that's critical of legislators at the moment because they're moving back the timeline rather significantly. Do you have any concerns that Beacon Hill lawmakers might maybe not necessarily be entirely friendly to proposals that would make it easier for businesses to get up and running in Massachusetts in the new marijuana industry, even if it's to help minority entrepreneurs?
Well, it's early to tell. So all we've seen so far is a 6-month delay. So what I'm hoping to see in these 6 months is a lot of data collected that will show what kind of changes need to be made, if any, and what that is based on, because we haven't seen that yet.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wonder about for small-scale businesses in general in these states where marijuana has been legalized, what kind of competition are they facing or have they faced for licenses from larger investors? Because this is a potentially giant industry that a lot of people with a lot of money are interested in getting into. I mean, have some small-scale entrepreneurs, you know, minority, female, or otherwise, been elbowed out because they just can't compete with the expertise and investment money from larger groups?
We've seen some of that. What I often tell people is that if you're looking at the long game and you're, say, a minority who wants to be get involved in the industry, one, if you start with a job at an existing dispensary, there's very few of those now compared to, say, in 10 years when this will be likely a $1 billion industry in Massachusetts. And at that time, you'll have 10 years of experience when not a lot of people do. So look at the growth opportunities, one. And then number two, when you start a business that doesn't touch the plant, you don't need one of those special licenses. So my company, THC Staffing Group, it's a recruiting company. So we just need a placement agency license in Massachusetts. And there are a lot of women and people of color locally who own these kinds of ancillary business where you make things like software or accessories and devices, and you don't have to worry about those massive barriers to entry and competition.
Interesting. So sort of as you said, ancillary or corollary opportunities that reduce the barriers to entry.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Shalene Title is a founding board member of the Minority Cannabis Business Association and a partner at THC Staffing, a recruiting firm for the legal marijuana industry. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.